All right, John chapter 9, seeing was the crime. In John chapter 9, we're going to see Jesus opening the eyes of a blind man who was born that way. But what we're going to see here is the official religious leaders are going to interrogate this guy, discredit him, and finally cast him out of the synagogue simply for now being able to see. And we might ask ourselves, how much have things really changed? When people's eyes are open today to Christ, the scripture, and to the realities the approved people will not admit, the mainstream church and the world often answer the same way. They'll call people that can see, that couldn't see, heretics, racists, and ignorant sinners not really attaining the level of sophistication that they have. Then they move from there to canceling people. But the man Jesus healed didn't bend to the will of the mainstream religious community or the world. He stood his ground and told them exactly what he saw and didn't care whether that was going to get him banished, excommunicated, or whatever from the synagogue. So let's get into it. John chapter 9, verse 1. And Jesus passed by, and as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? You know, it's interesting. Even the disciples got caught into this mentality. We often think if something bad happened to a person, it's because they did something wrong and they are being punished. Now, sometimes that is the case, right? We have Deuteronomy 28, where God says, if you violate my commandments and do this, I'll send plagues upon you. You're going to be cursed when you come in and cursed when you go out and all that. So that can be the case. But in other cases, like Job, for instance, and this blind man, that was not the case, as we're going to see here. It's interesting. I want, for the deeper student, I want you to think about this. How could this man have sinned if he was born blind? If he was born blind, where would the opportunity for him to sin have come from? And it makes me wonder, did the ancient Hebrews, at least certain sects of them, believe in pre-existence? It seems to suggest that they did. In fact, in the New Testament, we find out not only, we know that Jesus pre-existed, right? He was the incarnate Word of God that was with God from the beginning. But you find this curious phrase throughout the New Testament, people that were foreordained or predestinated before they were even born. Jacob, God loved, and Esau, God hated while they were in the womb. How could he do that? Did that soul exist before in a heavenly realm where Satan had a great rebellion and some stood with God and others followed Satan in the rebellion? I think that's probably the case. Revelation chapter 12 certainly alludes to that the dragon drew a third of the stars of heaven or the third of the souls a long time ago. So it's really fascinating. Why would they ask if this guy sinned, if he was blind because he sinned, if he was born that way? That means if he had sinned, it would have been prior to him being born, right? Or in the womb, which doesn't really make any sense. You can't really sin when you're in your mother's womb. Maybe kick your mom too many times while she's sleeping or something. I don't know how that would work. So it is very interesting. Okay. Just wanted to throw that in for the deeper student. Verse 3, Jesus answered, neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. In other words, he was born blind for a reason, and it wasn't because of sin. You know, we're all born in sin in that sense, but he's talking about like a big sin. Did this guy sin way more than did this guy's parents sin? You're talking about something particular, right? he was born blind for a reason, but it was so that God could show his works through this man. Now, I want you to think about that a lot. There are a lot of people born with different things these days. Sometimes there's handicapped kids that are born, they're born handicapped, right? And sometimes those kids make the greatest witnesses in people's lives than a whole person can make. And so, you know, we don't want to look down upon people. You know, the Pharisees will, right? They're so perfect. They're so religious. And everybody else who isn't as sophisticated as them must be a lowly, low-class sinner, okay? Verse 4, Jesus says, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. This is interesting, okay? Obviously, daytime is when it's when you can work, and, you know, there wasn't, we have night shifts now, right? People work, I used to work night shift for many years, but that, you know, we have electricity. But the common thing, you know, back in these days, hey, when it was daytime, you worked. When it was nighttime, you couldn't work because you can't see. What does that mean spiritually? Or what does that mean on a deeper level, if you would? Well, he's talking about he must work the work while he's here in the flesh. Somehow I lost communication with my verses. We'll pull that up. Oh, didn't lose it there. He must work the works while he is yet alive before he is crucified. Now, why do I bring that up? Because we all have a certain allotted amount of time on the earth. Could be 1 year, could be 2 days, it could be tonight, it could be 50 years or 100 years from now. But what should our focus be? Doing God's work while it is day, while you have the breath of life in you, okay? Verse 5, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Now, this ties all the way back to the beginning of this book, you know, the book of John. It's all about a new creation. There's so much language in here that's parallel to that in the book of Genesis, because we're not talking about a new physical creation in the book of John. We're taking this from this physical creation that had fallen, that had become decayed, and now Jesus is coming to bring in a new spiritual creation. That's why you have themes like being born again and things like that, because we're talking about something much greater than the physical realm that we see. So when he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. Now, this seems a little bit strange, right? It almost kind of seems gross in some sense. Man, imagine somebody just spitting on the ground on some dirt, rubbing it, and now he's going to put it on your eyes. It's like, I don't like other people's spit on me, you know? It's kind of a strange thing. I mean, I think there's something deeper that we're going to see, and I might as well get into it now, otherwise I'll probably forget. We're going to find out this is on the Sabbath day. And one of the Sabbath laws, not made by God's law, but Sabbath rules, ordinances made by the scribes and Pharisees, you know, the religious community, was they said one of the things you couldn't do on the Sabbath was do any clay pottery. You couldn't do anything with clay. Okay. And Jesus had a habit of purposely antagonizing the Pharisees when they were wrong, when they were totally blind to the real purpose of things. He would purposely put his finger on that error of theirs and get them all bent out of shape. And this would be so he could expose error, right? We can do that today. We're not Jesus, but we can do that sometimes today. We can be provocative like Jesus. I mean, he's our, right? Like father, like son, so to speak, like teacher, like master. Hey, we can copy some of the things he did. We don't have to be perfect like him to do that. And there are many good Christian commentators and teachers. I see them all the time out there on social media. Some of the bigger name rebellious type people out there just having a blast making these religious hypocrites and the Zionists all, you know, getting their undies in a bunch, right? It's hilarious. And that's, Jesus had a sense of humor, I think, at the same time. He's like, okay, let's see how these guys handle this. I'm going to work pottery today in my healing. And there's also a deeper meaning in this as well. I keep saying that today. There's a lot of deep stuff in the word. But when God made Adam, what did he make him out of? Clay. That was the initial creation. So it makes perfect sense that Jesus is finishing that creation by giving this guy the spirit. He was born blind, but now he's finishing the creation by giving him eyes to see. Okay. So, and he said unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. Why would he say that? Why would the Apostle John have to give us the meaning of the pool's name, Siloam, being sent? He went his way, therefore, and washed and came seeing. Okay. So I think this guy, I think why he went to this pool of Siloam or the pool of the sent, this guy was chosen. Okay. This was a chosen vessel of God, and he was born blind, and he was looked upon by the religious community as a nobody, a nothing, non-sophisticated, non-intelligent. And you're going to see that's just the kind of people who God chooses. If you're looking for the greatest, most popular pastor out there on the mainstream television channels, on this, you're looking in the wrong place. You're probably looking at the Pharisees, right? And that's, you wouldn't look, who's going to believe this blind man as being a chosen vessel of God, being sent to do what? Jesus said it. Why was this man born blind? To show the works of God. I may ask you guys this. Many of you guys, not necessarily in this room, I know you guys are kind of perfect people, right? But just the people listening on YouTube, they're the people that are imperfect. We're a little cleaner in here. Just kidding. A lot of people listening to this, listen to our channel. A lot of people were born in ignorance, born in sin, right? Just you had a sinful life. You were never grew up in a very holy family, if you would. And all of a sudden, God just opened your eyes and you could see. And now you could see things that the religious people thought were religious all their lives, that is Pastor so-and-so, and that's the great Dr. so-and-so. And now you're this miserable, begging sinner that can now see what's going on, and they can't. And they hate you for it because you didn't go to their seminary. You didn't do the things that they did to get to where they got, so they could tell you how God speaks to people, right? And you're going to see this. We see this play out all the time, is God will choose the foolish things of this world to confound the wise. Okay, well, give me an example of that, Pastor Ben. Who did Jesus pick to follow him? Did he go up to the great Pharisees? He did one later on, Paul, but that wasn't one of the original 12. But there were fishermen, tax collectors, people whom the religious community looked at as nothings, uneducated, not spiritually wise like them, okay? So the neighbors, we'll continue on, verse 8, the neighbors therefore, and they which before had seen him that he was blind, said, is not this he that sat and begged? Was not this that sinner over there that we knew all our lives? How can he see? Verse 9, some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. But he said, I am he. He confirmed, that's me. Okay, I was that guy begging and blind. For some reason, I'm had a perfect streak here with my iPad working, and now I'm frozen. Okay. So while we're waiting for my verses to come back, we'll fill some time here. Anybody got a good joke? Clean? No, I'm just kidding. All right, I'm back. Can't tell it now. It's working. Okay, verse 10. Therefore said they unto him, how were thine eyes opened? And he answered and said, a man that is called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said unto me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed, and I received sight. Lucy, there, if on the top there on the screen, upper right-hand corner, can you select that the Wi-Fi is on? I think it might be off, and that's why I'm not getting as great of connectivity. All right. So his answer was, a man that is called Jesus made clay, and notice it was clay, and anointed mine eyes and said unto me, go to the pool of Siloam, wash, and I went and washed, and I received sight. So he's just recounting the facts, okay? I don't know. This guy named Jesus, all he did was make clay, put the clay on my eyes, that's anointing, told me to go and wash, and now I see, right? Simple as that. Factual, plain, and straightforward. Verse 12, they said unto him, where is he? He said, I know not. They brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind. So these Jews, these very religious Jews, like, okay, we tried to question this guy. You know, we're not getting anywhere with him, so let's bring him to the Pharisees, okay? Let's bring him to the higher authority here. Verse 14, and it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes, okay? And there again, Jesus liked to do the healing on the Sabbath day. And I said before, he likes to provoke he likes to expose the errors of the religious hypocrites by doing such things. But also, if you think about it, the Sabbath's purpose was for that, for healing and restoring that which was lost, right? That is the purpose of the Sabbath. Verse 15, then again, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said unto them, he put clay upon mine eyes, and I washed, and I do see. So he's got to repeat himself now to the Pharisees. Verse 16, therefore said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. But we might ask ourselves, did Jesus not keep the Sabbath day? The Sabbath is about healing, restoration. The guy couldn't see all of his life, and Jesus just healed or restored him. That's the purpose of the Sabbath, right? Others said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them, just like there's a division today, right? When the religious hypocrites see the real work of God, they don't believe it. Because it doesn't fit in with their system, with their theology, if you would. We're going to tie this into something here, a little deeper here in a second. You'll see what I'm talking about. Verse 17, they say unto the blind man again, what sayest thou of him, that he hath opened thine eyes? He said, he is a prophet. So the blind man he's thinking, the guy must be a prophet. So they asked him, what do you think he is? He's a prophet. Verse 18, but the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, is this your son whom you say was born blind? How then doth he now see? His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but by what means he now seeth, we know not, or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age, ask him, he shall speak for himself. All right, so they basically say, yes, this is our son, he was born blind, and I don't know how he can see now, but he can see. So this is a true witness, right? They're not making anything up. There's no ulterior motives going on here. They're just stating facts. Verse 22. These words spake his parents because, now check this out, they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. They should be kicked out of church. If anybody acknowledges Christ, we all of us religious people, we're going to agree, we're going to kick those bastards out of our church. I don't like this word, but it's interesting as we see this. Those of you who have studied the book of Esther with us and the earlier portions of the book of John, we see this phrase here, they feared the Jews. Fear of the Jews. You see it in the book of Esther. Today, the modern equivalent would be political correctness. Okay? You can't say that which is not deemed correct by those in charge. I might ask yourselves, who's in charge? Well, Revelation chapter 2, 9, and 3, 9 says there are those who claim to be Jews and are not, but do lie, that are of the synagogue of Satan. They are the ones, you know, still in charge to this day by manipulation of kings and politicians and blackmail operations like Epstein Island, you name it. Right? You guys all, most people listen to this program know how all this works. You already know. You're there. You have eyes to see, right? But notice the parents here, they did not, this is something you don't want to do, right? They let the fear of the Jews affect the way that they answered. They didn't want to, they knew, it's apparent here, it's apparent that they knew that Jesus was the one who healed their son. But they didn't want to proclaim Jesus' name because they didn't want to get kicked out of church. They didn't want the Zionist-run political church establishment in America, who's the approved evangelical, that's the approved evangelical thought that you must bless the state of Israel or be cursed, right? I don't want to get kicked out of church. I don't want people to look at me as an anti-Semite, okay? That's the equivalent today of what it was then, okay? I'm bringing this to modern terms. Because you know what? If you study the Bible and you never say, okay, well, how does this apply today? Who's in charge of us? Who are we supposed to be fearful of? Who's trying to silence our witness of the gospel, of the truth, of just plain facts? Who's doing that? Well, it's the same people, right? Same people as they were back then. You're literally living an extension of the book of John, if you would, today, if you're a Christian. Okay. So, you could look at the Pharisees and all of these groups that we're talking about today. You could look at these, many people do, as those who hold the Zionist view. Why do I say Zionist view? Because Zionism, political Zionism today, man, religious Zionism, is an outright rejection that Jesus is the Christ. The modern state of Israel rejects that Jesus is the Christ. You could be a Jew today by birth, and try to move over to Israel, and if you say you're a Christian, they will deny you citizenship. If you are you claim to be a biological Jew today, and you submit your application for citizenship, but you say you're an atheist, the modern state of Israel will accept you. Get the picture? Do you have eyes to see? Verse 23, therefore said his parents, he is of age, ask him. So they're deflecting, playing it careful, you can just picture them like not wanting to answer the question because they don't want to get banished from society, right? Banished from the religious community, the nation, looked upon as some evildoers. So they're like, just go ask him. He's old enough. He can tell you. Think about that. They're literally think about these parents here. They're literally putting their son in a more dangerous position to save their own skin. How many people do that today? How many people don't want to be associated with somebody who believes that there's a serpent seed, which is clearly stated in the Bible, that there's a woman seed and a serpent seed? How many people would all of a sudden not want to be associated with you because somebody said that's racist, that's bigoted, that's sexist, and all, you don't want to be associated with them? Why? Because you're a coward. You're afraid of the fake Jews and the Zionists and the liberals and the leftists, all those controlled by this, by either the Sadducees or the Pharisees, right? The left or the right. You're afraid of what they are going to say about you because you're a coward and a worm. Sorry, I didn't mean to be offensive today, but I couldn't see it saying it any other way. How, we got a lot of cowards in our nation today. People know the truth. They see what's going on. They might see an obvious truth. I'll say this, and I don't want people to, I don't care. Okay. So you look at big classes of people, right? There's white trash. There are some white people that are absolutely trash and horrible and wicked and evil, vile people, right? But statistically, we see that in America, if black people commit more crimes than white people, right? But you can't say that. That's an obvious truth. Everybody knows it. Even the people who get mad at you for saying it, they know it, but you can't say it. Why? Because if I can say it, then you say, well, why is this happening? And then you can address the problem. Well, maybe it's because a lot of black fathers are not staying there with their kids. And then you could say, fathers, black dads, you need to man up. You need to do your duty rather than say, you can't say that. So what, you're going to let all these kids suffer without dads because you're going to go along with political correctness and you're going to fear the Jews and you're going to save your skin because you don't want somebody to call you a racist? What kind of a coward are you? You know, I praise God that I am seeing people wake up on the political scene. They're saying the truth and they don't give a rip about what people say about them. They don't care if they're cast out of society, canceled or whatnot. Did Jesus care? No, he didn't. Okay? He did not. And if you do care, this is the warning that Jesus gives to us if we do care. Jesus says, if you will not take up your cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. If you're afraid that the world's going to call you a racist, a sexist, and a bigot, like the left does, and I'll go as far as to say the mainstream Christian religious community, you start talking about the serpent seed as being a literal thing, which it obviously is when you look at it, because you can see it today. I mean, if you have eyes to see, you look at, you see who's doing it, you're like, same group. Doing it here, doing it back in the Garden of Eden or in Eden. I can't say it because they're going to say you're this and that, but I see it, right? Anyways, all right. I don't know where I was going with that, but getting all worked up here. All right, verse 24. Then again called they the man that was blind and said unto him, I was going to talk about the serpent seed, right? That is the one. It's interesting. You even see some pretty decent Christian guys. That's like the one thing that both the world and those who deem themselves very religious and holy and, you know, not bigoted or racist or all that. That's the one thing you can't say. And you got to ask, you can't talk about the serpent. They're going to call you a racist and anti-Semite and all this kind of stuff. Even though you're actually protecting those who are of real Judah from the liars. So the whole thing's a big, big mess, right? But they won't go there. They won't go there. They just, because they don't want to be thought of as some kind of a person like that, right? But the one thing that I've always done in my life, especially in my older years, is whenever you see, and this doesn't work for everything, it's not all the time, but whenever you see your so-called Christian right or religious people, those people you consider decent people, not like the whack job, pink-haired people out in the streets, you know, screaming and wailing like they got some demon on their back or whatever, if your fellow brethren are agreeing with very important, if they're agreeing with something that the left does in condemnation of what you see as a reality, you see it with your eyes and you're like, I can't unsee this. If they're taking the side of the leftists and everything, it's kind of easy. You kind of say, there's a problem here. It's not me, right? I've got plenty of problems, right? You can ask my wife, right? I'm not a perfect person. But there's some things you can see. You ask my kids, they'll tell you I'm perfect. They couldn't ask for a better dad. But there's some things you can see that you can't unsee when the Holy Spirit, when Jesus anoints your eyes and you see it. And I tell you, the things that he lets me see, such as the physical serpent seed and all that, I am determined to never let anybody try to get me to unsee those things because it's so obvious to me. Verse 24. Then again called they the man that was blind and said to him, give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner. So now they're asking this guy. They're just like, okay, well, you see and you couldn't see before, so just give God the praise, but don't give it to that man, Jesus. Don't give him credit for this because he's a sinner. Verse 25. He answered and said, now I want you guys to think about that for a second. The accepted religious community, and it's no different today, thought Jesus was a sinner. Things haven't changed. We haven't evolved, and now everybody sees and gets it, and the mainstream church is just perfect now. It's the same. You're going to have blind people like this that nobody thought could see that can see and are still considered ignorant and will be cast out of the mainstream. And then you're going to have these hypocrites. Verse 25, he answered and said, whether he be a sinner or no, the blind guy, whether Jesus be a sinner or no, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. Verse 26, then said, no, this is the mark of somebody who actually can see. It's very simple to them, right? It's like, don't throw smoke screens at me and say, you see all these people in mass do this, you know, but there's not something going on behind the scenes of why we're seeing this trend, okay? Why those claiming to be of Judah, and many are not, and do lie, why they got kicked out of so many countries in Europe, in Christian Europe, from country to country to country? Is it just because people just have hate in their heart for some group, just because they hate them? Or is it because there's something they were doing that was hurting their society and they were reacting in a way that most people would want to react, right? And we're asked to believe the thing that doesn't make any sense. Oh, they just hate them people because they're racist, right? I don't know. I know there are people that just hate people because of their color, their race, their tribe or whatever. I know there probably are some of those people, but man, they are a very, very small minority. If you think about all the people that are accused, I can tell you this, I do not hate one person, even just because they were born of Cain, or they're Asian, or they're black, Hispanic. I don't ever hate one person because of that. I don't think any less of them because of that. But that doesn't make me say that I don't see trends in certain cultures and ways of life and different tribes and groups, right? All right. You know, actually, there are some in Africa, there are some Christian communities that make some of our white communities to shame. I'll say that there are exceptions. Right. And this isn't a black and white thing. I'm using black and white because that's the easiest contrast. We're talking about any differences in tribes and stuff like that. But that is the one thing you can't see. What we're dealing with in America is we do have a huge problem of black crime in our, we just saw it. It was during the COVID years. You had the patron saint of the left, George Floyd, right? Guy that was hopped up on drugs. They found out later that he actually died of the drug, the autopsy says he died of a drug overdose. The cops used the approved methods. But yet the white cop is condemned. The white cop is condemned for doing the job that he was trained to do. And I don't know he's perfect. Maybe he's not a perfect person, but that's not the point. He was condemned for apprehending a criminal and apprehending him the way he was trained to do. He's in prison today while this drug addict that pointed guns to pregnant ladies' bellies is revered as a saint. Okay? And you could also look at this. This was kind of interesting. There was a big mural on the side of a building, right? Of George Floyd with a halo or something around him. This was soon after, this was like within weeks of that whole event. And lightning struck the side of that building, burnt that mural up. And I thought, had to be the hand of God. It's blasphemous. They were making George Floyd into like some kind of a Jesus type savior figure. And he was a Barabbas. Think about that. The world does the same today. Free Barabbas. Condemn the righteous. All right, verse 26. Then said they to him again, what did he to thee? How opened he thine eyes? Verse 27, he answered them, I have told you already, and you did not hear. Wherefore, would you hear it again? Will you also be his disciples? I love this. This blind guy is mocking them now. Because they're asking him again, and now he's like, hey, you guys already asked me that. Do you want me to tell you again? Are you interested in being his disciples now too? Verse 28, then they reviled him and said, thou art his disciple, but we are Moses's disciples. Now, the one point I want to ingrain in everybody's mind, if I can, is that these were not considered evil people. These were respected people in the community that are treating this guy like this. All right? Their claim isn't to be a modern leftist. Their claim isn't to be a devil worshiper. Their claim isn't to be a secularist. Their claim is to be the rightful religious authorities. We have Moses. We are Moses' disciples. We are disciples of the law of God. We are the moral people. Think about that. Who would that equate to today? Where's the hypocrisy coming from today? It's coming from the Christian Zionists. Now, it's not only this. That's on the large scale, the national level, the world level. This can go right down to your local church level, and people can apply it that way. Verse 29, we know that God spake unto Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from whence he is. As far, they're talking about Jesus, right? They say, we know who Moses was. As this fellow, this Jesus guy, we don't know where he came from. He's a nobody. Verse 30, the man answered and said unto them, why, herein is a marvelous thing, that you know not from whence he is, and yet he hath opened mine eyes. Now think about this, for all the non-believing Jews, you say you're a disciple of Moses, and you say you don't know who this Jesus character is, but yet this blind man has way more wisdom than all of the Pharisees put together with this one statement. He says it's pretty marvelous. You say you don't know who this guy is, yet he's the guy that gave me sight. In other words, if you were really the righteous, legitimate religious leaders, you would know exactly who this guy is because of what he just did and what he's been doing. Verse 31. Now we know that God heareth not sinners. This is the blind man speaking. But if any man be a worshiper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? That's a fascinating statement. It's one that I never really thought much about, because there were people in the Old Testament, prophets, Elijah, Elisha, the Moses, There were many miracles performed in the Old Testament, but the one miracle that was never done, that was reserved only for the Messiah, was to give sight to the blind. Now, I might ask you guys this. Who is the only one that can give you spiritual eyes to see and ears to hear? A prophet, a man, a teacher? We know that's not the case. What did Jesus say to Peter when Peter saw Jesus as the Messiah? He proclaimed him as the Messiah. Jesus said, "Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father, which is in heaven." Okay? So there are truths that are so obvious to us when our eyes have been opened that we could probably prove logically, but even if we could prove it logically to somebody, most people aren't going to hear it. They're going to reject it because they don't want to hear it, because it would put them in opposition with the world or the established religious community, and they don't want to forsake that. They want that prestige. They want that belongingness. I belong as part of the, I feel like I'm a part of something here, and now I'm faced with being a nobody and only having Jesus. Okay. Sometimes we've faced that too. Sometimes, you know, through the years we've thought about, okay, you know, we just want to study the Bible chapter by chapter and verse by verse, but we want to be around other Christians, around other good people. But the problem I would always run into anyways is you would go and try to get that fellowship, but it didn't feel real. It was a very surface level. You start touching on the real important topics, and you know that those people that you want to fellowship with are going to say, "I don't want anything to do with that. I mean, serpent seed, Kenites, talking about racial issues and biological lines and things in the Bible. I don't want anything to do with that. I only want the things that even the left won't get too mad about, right? Even the left won't get too mad about." And so we have to face that reality. Sometimes you will be a small minority. This blind man was going to lose all communication. If you're cast out of the synagogue at this time, you're as good as dead. Like, nobody will associate with you. Nobody wants anything to do with you. You are all alone. But what's being all alone in the world with God as your constant companion? Which would you choose? To be a friend of the world and be accepted, or a friend of God? Okay, so he says, verse 33, "If this man were not of God, he could do nothing." Verse 34, "They answered and said unto him, Thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us? And they cast him out." Did you know that they just revealed the condition of their heart here? And I dare say, and no matter how many times these pastors get up there in many of these churches and try to look like the innocent dove that they are, the innocent sheep that they are, and they got to tell you how humble I am today. I'm humbled by this and humbled by that. How many of them would listen to somebody from their congregation come in and say, "Dude, I'm seeing something here that's so obvious." And this guy might have tattoos all over him, might have been a drunk before, a sinner, he was blind. And that pastor would look at him and say, "He has not been to my seminary. The religious community would not approve of this serpent seed stuff and whatever else you're talking about here. And let me help you. I'll give you some counseling. We'll talk about the love of God here and why what you're doing is not very loving." Okay? And on and on. You can see it, right? Because what the mentality of the Pharisees here is, instead of rejoicing with the man who is blind who can now see, they don't believe it. And then they call him, "You're just born in sins. You're the low class guy. We were up here. My dad was a pastor and I became a pastor," or whatever. "I was part of this group." There's this two-class mentality. This is elitist mentality. And I've seen this elitist mentality in many churches, but what you're often going to see is the facade first that a lot of people get, they buy into it, right? Because the pastor will get up there, like I said, and act like an innocent sheep, be very gentle and soothing with his voice. And therefore you think he's a man of God. He cares about people. He loves people. Well, you know what? I trust a guy that's going to use coarse words once in a while. I would listen to a pastor who said the S word over a pastor who would be offended over the S word or the D word or the F-A-G word or something like that. If I heard a pastor say F-A-G versus a pastor that would get it, I would have trust the pastor that said F-A-G. Now, if the pastor said F-A-G all the time because he just hated people and didn't want to see people reform, then I'd be like, yeah, this guy's kind of a dirtbag, right? But if he said it, you know, so it's like some words, and I'm using that as an example. We often, the Pharisees would have been that type of person that would never have used the coarse language in front of people, okay? Because they were up here, and their common people are down here, and I'm here to help the little people, right? That's the mentality. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they had cast him out. He was banished from society. What was his crime? What was the guy cast out for? The title of the study? He was cast out for seeing. Now, there's this term going on. Many people are cast out for noticing things today. When you notice trends in cultures, in nations, societies, religious beliefs, and you start kind of categorizing them in groups, and if you notice things that are just true and they happen, that is your crime. You can't notice what you see. If you do say what you see and don't say, I'm not really seeing what I see, then you're banished. It's a crime, as this guy's crime was, okay? But Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, dost thou believe on the Son of God? Interesting. This was important to Jesus. He's asking him, do you believe in the Son of God? Verse 36, he answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? Think about this. This guy was sent from God. His whole life he was born blind for this moment. And, you know, he's just asking these simple questions. Who is he? Verse 37, and Jesus said unto him, thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. In other words, I am the Son of God that's speaking to you. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Very simple. Nothing deep theological. There wasn't anything, you know, this is interesting. People aren't usually converted by deep theological discussions, right? It's usually something simple. What did the Lord just do in my life? And this is why I can, this is funny because I always get people that have so-called studied the Bible for a while. I've had family members, people close. All of a sudden now they've come across something that is really deep, deeper than what we've all been learning. And now we find out the Bible is a conspiracy, right? The whole thing's a conspiracy. We've been lied to. Because you don't know this manuscript, B, C, and A, and these scrolls found in this cave, and they don't even know what they're talking about, first of all, right? They're just throwing out all this stuff to make it sound like they have some kind of a case that they can build against Christ. But I always go back to the simple thing. I know what Jesus has done in my life. I know how God has touched me at various stages in my life. And no thief is going to come and steal that from me by trying to peddle a bunch of garbage my way. And it's not that I'm closed-minded and I'm not going to listen to it. I don't need to listen to it because I have experienced it. I have felt the Holy Spirit transform me from within. I feel the Holy Spirit chastise me periodically through my life, and I find myself having to say, okay. Now, that's interesting. I want to go to that. The mindset of the Pharisees, were they willing to accept correction from an unlikely source? This is a mark of a man of God, okay? A man of God will see that he's wrong and say, okay, no matter where the source is, no matter who it's coming from, right? You have to be that kind of person that's willing to be wrong, to say, I screwed up. I couldn't see it. I was blind. I was being an idiot, all right? You're right. And it doesn't matter who it is. It's like you can't only take corrections from the experts. Sometimes God sends people in our life to say something to us to make us see something that's wrong in our heart. And we say, oh my gosh, I've been doing this wrong, this area of my life. Not everything wrong. I'm doing a lot of things right, but no, I'm just kidding. But you see that area in your life and they expose. God will send people like a blind sinner like that into your life. And you need to be aware of it. You need to be on guard. If you say, I'm not going to listen. That person just said, asked me if, gently corrected me. Maybe some person comes in your life, gently corrects you, and you're offended. You're mad because you know that person's right about you, but you don't want to accept it because your pride says, who the hell are they to tell me what to do? Who the hell are they? They haven't lived what I did, you know? And then you're blinded. See, I just used the word hell there. Is it, whoever just shut off the TV because that was, you know, pretty coarse language, or the TV, not the TV, the screen, internet, whatever. Sorry, can't help it. It's me, right? I do that sometimes. Verse 39. I better just move on before I get myself in worse trouble here. All right. And Jesus said, for judgment I am come into this world. That, now this is not a contradictory statement, because you're going to see here, because in other places, Jesus didn't come to judge the woman that was caught in adultery. He came to forgive her, right? He didn't, but he did come to judge some people. And it's obvious when you look at when he was teaching, he was judging who? What did he do in the very beginning of this book? Well, one thing he did, he made wine for a wedding, right? And that was great. And the next thing he did after he made wine and celebrated a wedding is he eyeballed the temple and saw a bunch of thieves in there. And he carefully made a whip with like cat of nine tails, like little stones or whatever on it. And he went in there. This wasn't just a belt like, you know, people talk about their grandparents spanking them with the leather belt or whatever. This was a cutting instrument that Jesus made, this whip. So if when he went into that temple and started whipping people, it was leaving some marks on them, like cuts. Okay, so you got to think, oh, that's not the Jesus I follow. Well, then that's fine. You can follow Satan and follow the father of lies and enjoy the short time that you may have. Could end tonight. All right, verse 39, Jesus said, okay, but he came to judge the religious hypocrites, okay? And Jesus said, for judgment, I am, and that's a scary thought, right? That thought always crosses my mind when I'm up here teaching and I do something different than what I've said that we should do. And I'm like, oh gosh, you know, I don't want to fall in that category of that, of the hypocrites. And so we always got to be on guard, right? To try to live what we preach. Verse 39, and Jesus said, for judgment, I am come into this world that they which see not might see. He's not talking physically here now. The whole healing of the blind man was a spiritual lesson. It was a physical healing, but a spiritual lesson. That they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind. Now, they didn't really see, right? They just claimed to have. So you got to understand this. So Jesus says, I came into this world to heal the blind and to make those that claim to see blind. Whoa. Did the Pharisees, did they get blinder? Did they get more blind after Jesus healed the blind man? They did. Their hearts got harder. They resisted the truth even more because it was about them. It wasn't about God. It wasn't about the blind man that couldn't see. He was just a sinner. He deserved it. He deserved to be like that. Not like me. I'm born healthy, never had a health problem. I'm not like that guy. Verse 40, and some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said unto him, are we blind also? You know, they're saying this sarcastically, like they're in unbelief that they could be blind. Are you trying to say we're blind also? Now you got to think about this. The people that are blind do not think they are blind. And the people that are blind, most people in the world consider them as seeing. Now, I'm not trying to start some cult here or something, say, well, only we can see, you know, but it is the way it is. There's an elect, there's a remnant, there always has been, that Jesus said could see the mysteries of the kingdom of God. Jesus said to his disciples, they said to Jesus, why do you speak to the multitudes in parables? Jesus said, I speak to them in parables because seeing they see and not perceive, and hearing they will hear and not understand. But to you, I've given the ability to see the mysteries of the kingdom. I've given you that deep insight. And what was that parable that he said that after? The parable of the tares that were sown by the wicked one, the children of the wicked one that were sown in this world that masqueraded as the true children of God, the wheat. And it all plays out today, what you're seeing in modern political affairs. All right. Anyways, are we blind also? Blind people do not think they're blind. Verse 41, Jesus said, and that's something that I even try to ask myself, am I being hardened? Am I a heart being hardened? And then what do you do when you get to that state? Pray that the Lord open your eyes and see the faults of your own heart. Lord, help, like the David in the Psalms, Lord, create in me a new heart. If we're not always constantly, I don't care how great of a man you are, how many years you've been teaching the Bible, if that's not a daily thing, you're probably one of these guys that Jesus is saying is blind. Jesus said unto them, if you were blind, you should have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remaineth. Because you claim to see and because you put yourself up as a religious authority, a religious teacher, Jesus said, you will be accountable as if you did understand. But they didn't understand. Think about that. Very, very serious charge. And a very serious warning to anybody, including myself, who stands at a pulpit or in a church proclaiming to be someone who can't explain the Bible, can't explain the truth. And it has to be taken very serious. With that said, we will take questions and comments.
I have maybe three comments. First one is, I think it's interesting when you look at people with disabilities, or whether they were born with it or whether they acquired it later in life, but I'd almost venture to say 100% of the time, but nothing seems like 100% of the time, that if you ask them if they would go back, if they could go back in time and change it or fix it or not be born with it, almost every time they say no, they wouldn't change a thing. And that always just blows my mind, especially like blind people and stuff. I just heard a guy that became blind, and he struggled, obviously, once he became blind, and he had all kinds of issues, but whatever happened, God worked in his life. It seems like these disabilities help people grow closer to God, which the last thing I want is a disability to help me grow closer to God, but I just think it's really interesting that most of the time they'll always say, I wouldn't change a thing.
Well, that's a biblical principle, actually, and we don't want it to have to be that way, but sometimes it is, right? But in our weakness, we are made strong. When we're weak in the flesh, we somehow gravitate more towards the spiritual, the things that are more spiritually important. Whereas if you're whole and healthy, it's easier to let the pride in the heart get hard. And so I would always say to young people, like, don't self-discipline yourself so that the Lord doesn't need to step in and correct you and humble you, because he may, if he has a purpose for you and a destiny, he may humble you if you're chosen to do his work and you're not quite doing it the way he wants you to. He may get your attention.
Yeah, some say Paul inherited or got some kind of a illness or some major health issue that I think he felt like was given to him to, or some people say it was given to him to, I don't know, humble him or, you know, something like that. I don't know all the details. I would just heard vague stories, you know, and kind of, I haven't really researched it. But.
Yeah, he called it, he wasn't specific. He called it a thorn in his flesh that basically kept him down here instead of elevating him. It just always kept him humble.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Also, the whole concept of washing, there's several places in the Bible where washing was a theme. And I've always made it clear that I believe in baptism is a very significant part of salvation. And then the Bible says over and over again, that's when you're washed clean and you come out of the waters new.
Right.
But, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why there's several examples is that the Bible, God, Jesus are using this to show that washing, when he washed in the pool or whatever he did to get his eyesight, that's after he washed, he was healed. It wasn't when Jesus right. touched him. It wasn't when Jesus put the mud on his face. It was after he washed. There's another example of Naaman, I believe, in the Old Testament, where he was told to, he was instructed to wash. I don't know if that was the one where he was instructed to wash seven times or something like that. And he had leprosy, and he was cleansed and was cured. Jesus, I even think if you go deep into Jesus washing the feet of the apostles, I think there's a lot of symbolism there with what was going to happen, his death, resurrection. Baptism is participating in Jesus' death and resurrection. Anyway, I just always thought that is a significant part of those scriptures is the washing and how it relates to baptism.
I'll add to that quickly because, yeah, that was a perfect point. The washing also symbolizes sanctification, the process, like becoming more holy, becoming more clean. And if you see the Pharisees, they would only wash Jesus said they only washed the outside. They only washed the part that other people can see, but they never washed the inside of their heart. And I would add to that, I think the lesson is the more we wash our heart, allow the Holy Spirit to work in our heart, the clearer we see, the more vision we have of ourselves and the world around us and God's overall plan. So if you want to see deeper into the mysteries of God, it's not just an intellectual thing. God won't let you see it by merely just studying. Studying shows your discipline and everything, but when we allow him to also work on our heart, then our insight grows with that.
Absolutely. And then last thought here on what you were talking about, and this again is where the truth is the truth, and a lot of people don't like the truth, but you know, when you're talking about like the black culture, black families, black heritage, and I mean, this isn't like some new thing. A lot of people believe this, and in fact, a guy I listened to, Jesse Lee Peterson, he's an influencer, interesting guy. He's a black guy, and he's pretty old. He grew up on a plantation and stuff like that. I mean, it was after slavery, but he believes this wholeheartedly, but that all the way through after emancipation, the slavery ended, up till literally like 1960, like all that time, black families were very Christian, they stayed together, the mom, the dad, the kids. There wasn't anything close to what it is today. They were very spiritual people, spiritual families. And it wasn't until after 1960 and the Civil Rights Movement that, and this is what Jesse Lee Peterson says too, he can explain it a lot better than I can, and I'm not going to go into all the depths of what happened with the policies and stuff, but basically the policies of the Civil Rights Movement created this avenue for the black people to get, you know, certain welfares from the government and things like that, that ended up separating them and taking them away from God and making them more dependent on government, and again, without going into a deep study on why that happened. It's a fact that it happened. And ever since then, they went from being, you know, like 80 to 90% Christian full family families to what they are today, which is a serious problem that occurred over time. And I would argue it was through Satan and Satan's involvement in destroying their culture. That actually, I won't go on too long, but, and this is the other thing that's bad to say, but they came from Africa as pagans. They came here, became Christians because of the
evil white man.
Because of the evil white man. And yes, was slavery bad in a lot of ways? Yes. There was horrible people that did things. But overall, what it did is ended up saving the black culture, the African Americans, and they were all Christians when they came out of slavery. And that's why they had such a long run of families and Christianity and goodness up until about the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah, and that's why you can't have Aunt Jemima anymore, because she was a nice black lady who was the product of slavery but who became a Christian. You know, I'm not saying that she's a Christian, but she's like the prototype.
Yeah.
Aunt Jemima, that
Uncle Ben.
that nice black lady who's living with white people, and she treats the white kids as though she's her aunt and stuff like that, you know. And you can't do that because it doesn't create this division that they want. They want us. See, the people, it's interesting. The people they call racist and bigots and everything are most often actually the people that want the best for all people. And it's the people that claim to be not racist and all that are the ones that are always, supporting the destruction of the people they claim to be helping.
Exactly.
Because it's sound on the outside what they're saying. They make it look on the outside as though they're holy, but when you look at in, it's all about that whole thing. The Pharisees always make the outside look holy, but the inside is rotten. And you just described the policies. Those policies, let's give them a helping hand. Let's give them all. We had them as slaves, so we're going to help them. And now they just created ghettos with them, right?
Yeah, and they give them more money the more kids they have.
Yeah.
And especially if dad's gone, then they get even more money.
Yeah.
So it incentivizes single moms, and which now these kids grow up in these neighborhoods and create gangs and all the bad stuff that goes with it.
But the liberals making that policy can stand up and
they're the ones
and be revered as compassionate, loving, all these things.
But
and it's the opposite.
Outed himself. Remember when we rewatched the movie Gone with the Wind?
Mm.
Remember how the politicians, the sneaky guy that was moving in trying to get their votes and everything? Rewatch that movie. It's alarming.
That's why they're trying to cancel
it. If you can
that.
Find it.
They actually outed themselves.
Gone
for
with the Wind.
Their MO.
Yeah.
In that whole, I never knew that was there until we watched it, 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's, I think we watched it because they were trying to cancel it.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I've actually watched it.
You might not even be able
through.
To get it on Amazon or
Gone
anything
with the
anymore.
Wind. Yeah, I'm going to have to watch it.
Because they don't want the narrative of Christians that own slaves as being a positive thing. You know, a non-Christian owning somebody is terrible, right? A Christian who has slaves is going to teach them the gospel, going to treat them with love. They're going to, they're going to treat them better than they treat, I don't want anybody to take this wrong, right? Let's say somebody who's a shepherd of sheep. Those shepherds take care of those sheep, right? And they're animals. Well, those same people, do you think they're going to treat humans less than they treat their sheep, even if they're servants? Not if they're Christians. They're going to treat them at a higher level than, but they try to make it look like the blacks were treated in, obviously there's exceptions to the rule. There were bad, non-Christian slave owners that were just sadistic, whatever, brutal. But they want to portray the Christian slave owner as treating blacks as less than their animals. And that's a lie. It's all a lie.
And obviously, there's exceptions. There's always bad people in everything all the time. So, but they focus on that.
Yeah. Last week we talked about it. It's like white people, if we're going by colors here, right? And we don't, white people have been slaves often, right? The children of Israel were slaves in Egypt for 400 years. They were brutalized and made slaves by the Assyrians and the Babylonians. So we're no strangers to, our ancestors are no strangers to slavery. It's just, it wasn't the most recent thing, right? And we were slaves to brutal dictators, brutal slavery, like satanic type slavery.
That's interesting when you look at it that way. Like the God's chosen people were slaves for, you know, multiple times. And the result was they came out of it as, you know, God's chosen people to enter the promised land. And of course there were bumps along the way, but you could look at the same, the black people from Africa that were pagans and all that, they came, they were slaves, but then when they left slavery, they were all Christian people. They entered the promised land. Yeah. So there was a moment of suffering, you could say.
Now that what
and then then you get the final result is your life for God.
You seeing that logical thing is a crime.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Because everybody knows, anybody that literally looks at this, they know that that was a, they came out better, right? If you're looking at it from the big picture, cannibals. They were literal cannibals in Africa there. These people are going, so God's going to judge that, right? Of course he's going to judge that, but not, in his judgment, he offered mercy. I'm not saying going over on the boats was all pretty and everything, but there was a judgment happening to the African nation because they were pagans eating people, all kinds of
ruthless,
horrendous things. Yeah. So many of them did die in the process, but I should say a remnant or a greater than a remnant survived and were saved and created, had the potential of creating a new legacy of their descendants becoming Christians until all of a sudden the self-righteous whites got in and felt guilty about...
Right in the 1960s is when it all turned
over. But you know what? And honestly, all that goes back to, you find out who led the abolitionist movement, who led all these, the civil rights movement. It goes back to the same people. It's a serpent seed. And as I said, you just look at the names, you connect the dots, it's the same people.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's Satan's plan? It's pretty much black and white, you know, bringing people, giving people things so they don't need God, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Or being happy without the spiritual part. I mean, that's Satan's plan, is to have the government be their God.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because Mystery Babylon, which a lot of people would think is good, it's good to have prosperity and wealth. And it can be, right? Abraham was. But it can also be, from Mystery Babylon's standpoint, is that Satan's tool to get you away from God, because you're totally consumed with all of the worldly possessions and fame and lusts of the flesh.
And I'm not convinced that, I mean, the ending of slavery, the abolishment of slavery, I mean, that was, they say Abraham Lincoln was a big part of that. I think in and of itself, that was a good thing. I mean, just like the Israelites got released from slavery and they found God, at least for a short time or whatever. Same thing with the black people. They were slaves, they were released, and they found God. They were very Christian, family-oriented. So the abolishment, to me, is, I think, a good thing. I mean, I think God puts people in slavery and groups of people for reasons. And I think that was one of their reasons, like you said, that they were being punished for their pagan lifestyles, maybe, discipline.
Right.
And then they were shown the light, and then they got released and got to be free people that followed God. So, I mean, but then that's when the serpent seed got in. Right from the beginning, once they were all Christians and having successful families and businesses and were being successful people, that's when Satan got in there and started to mess it all up. But
well, and at the end of the day, like Jesus said, learn the truth and the truth shall set you free. Spiritual freedom is far greater than physical freedom, right? That's what we seek. We should be seeking the spiritual freedom, even if, I mean, there were many Christians back in the New Testament that were slaves, right? And the Apostle Paul told them, and others, I think Peter did as well, told them to obey their masters, and to, you know, flourish under their masters. He didn't tell them, "You're don't listen to that evil bastard slave owner of yours. You're a Christian now. Run away from him." He actually told one runaway slave to go back to the master. And so it's the perspective thing, right? It's the spiritual freedom is what we should be seeking.
Absolutely.
And if physical slavery sometimes brings spiritual freedom, which it kind of does sometimes, Israelites in Assyria and Babylonian captivity, those chastisements brought about a spiritual reformation.
And you could argue that with African Americans as well.
Yeah.
That slavery brought about a new movement of Christianity.
Well, and honestly, if you look at America today, we're being flooded with the third world now.
Yeah.
That's probably, I hate it, it sucks, but it's probably bringing many young men now to the faith because they're looking at their generations prior as abandoning them, right? As, you know, they see the, you know, I don't want to make this a class warfare thing, but they see the boomers, right? There's this big thing about the boomers. They lived, now not all of them, right? But as a class, they lived for them. Like, we're going to retire. We're going to build this big house. We're going to have a lake home here and here and there and whatever. At all of their, as a mass, at the expense of their children and their grandchildren's future. Not these boomers. These boomers are okay here. But the mentality was, let's live it up now. Let's get what we need. Americans didn't used to do that. You think about, it was all about like our forefathers who built the country. It wasn't about what they got now. It was a sacrifice they were willing to sacrifice for future generations. But it's not, you know, and so the young generation, what generation are our kids now?
Alpha and Z.
Alpha and Z or whatever. Now they're feeling like, how am I ever going to own a house? Because houses are $500,000 for something that used to be $90,000, you know, and it's like, and now AI's taking over jobs and everything. And it's like everything was quick and easy. And they're starting to see that they've been wronged by, they've been abandoned by the people who are supposed to be looking out for their future.
Mm-hmm. We got a few comments here. I'll just kind of read through and you can stop me if you want.
All right.
Granya says, have you heard about the Noah? Have you heard about the Noah but Noahide laws they are going to pass in November?
Okay, so I'm going to have to confess. I've had a lot of people throughout the years say, do I know about the Noahide laws? And, you know, in a negative way, like, do you know? And I have never yet studied these laws. I hear some people talk about them, but it's probably a real thing. I apologize for, I still have not dug deep into what those are.
Yeah, I'm naive to it too. That's interesting. Philip says, good morning. I'll have to watch later. And then our prevost has a few things here. Says, for a second, I thought you were going to get into the subject of original sin. And he says, but the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them because they are spiritually discerned. Many, if not most, of the pastors that are woke to Zionism are in denial of true Israel. They can't see it and vehemently deny it. Many of them see it as Jacob and Esau rather than the seed of woman versus the serpent seed. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God. Man, I wish I'd have remembered my cheaters. Yeah, that might help. Two times? He said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. I must have skipped a couple here. References. 1 Corinthians 2, Paul speaks of enticing words of men's wisdom. Our faith should not stand in the wisdom of men. Now we have received the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God, that we might not know the things that are freely given to us, of God, which things also we speak not in the words which man's wisdom teacheth, but which the Holy Ghost teacheth, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. And then down here, you may be interested to research the 1800s and see where this all fell apart. This topic you're addressing, my historist friends covered this well. That is, if you agree with their assessment.
Ah, so a lot of different verses that were references, related references to what we were talking about. One thing I do want to reply to is the Zionists. What did he say? They were blind because they don't want to see who true Israel is, right? So you have, and I know I've said this before, but it's worth saying more than once. The replacement theologians, those people that believe that the church is the new Israel and that biological Israel means nothing anymore, are really, really close to having it all right. But then when they get challenged in a debate and they point out other scriptures where God says that, in the book of Hosea, for instance, where he says, even though Israel has sinned against me, I'm going to take them back, and even in their sin, as I cast them away and divorce them, and they're going to be as numerous as the sands of the sea, right? And so they don't know how to deal with those Bible verses. And I always kind of plead with them, and they're kind of hard-headed when it comes to this because they've already made this determination that flesh and blood doesn't play any role in this, and they want to stick to their guns on that, right? But when you see that Christian Europe, when you see and understand that they are actually the biological descendants of the 10 tribes, even the 12 tribes, there's no like sticking point. Like all this makes sense, right? It makes sense because of just who these people are and their natural tendencies to want to do certain things, to help people, build hospitals, you know, all that stuff, right? It all makes perfect sense. But in a world where the replacement theologians say they, and a lot of these guys are really good guys, they're on the money, and they know that there's an attack against white people, white men in particular, but they never stop and ask themselves, why white men? Just because we brought Christianity, just because we were Christians in Europe and we brought the gospel everywhere, why not, you know, people of other races? Why does the white man seem to always get singled out by the world? And the simple answer is because it goes all the way back to they are this seed of the woman, right? Because you could also be a white man who's not Christian, and the world still hates you because you're a white man. It's different. Like if you're a black man who's a Christian, the world can hate you for that. But if you're just a black man, the world's not hating you for that. But you see, there's a double standard there. You could just be a white person, white man, and the world hates you. But it all unravels and it all makes sense when you know that God has not forsaken Israel, like Paul said, and they still have a destiny and a purpose, though many of them are blinded even to this day. They still exist and they still have a purpose, but it's not those claiming to be Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. They are not biological Israelites. When you dig deep into it, like the Ashkenazi Jews and all that, they have no proof biologically and or prophetically that they are the heirs of Abraham. Sorry, that's all I got to say on that part.
Keith Holson says Noahide law is Jesus would be seen as a false idol, and your head would be on the line if you were found worshiping him.
Can you eat meat?
No.
Noahide law says you can't eat meat.
One of them said you can't eat a limb of an animal.
It's a live animal.
I don't even know what.
Because this has been around for a while.
From a live animal. Show compassion and avoid cruelty to living creatures.
That's where it's coming from. I have a relative, a close relative, and it's sad. But they've bought into this. And I always knew, like, there are some scriptures in the New Testament that would say, be aware of those people who tell you you can't eat meat, right? Like vegetarianism, veganism. And I thought, what's that all about? Like, I never see that, right? I'm not seeing something dangerous if somebody just doesn't want to eat meat or whatever. But I'm starting to see it. I've had loved ones that are now becoming vegetarians, but at the same time, they're rejecting the whole gospel, the teachings of Jesus. They'll say that, but I say, what about Jesus eating fish? No, that part was added to the Bible. What about all the sacrifices in the Bible? Like the blood sacrifices that the Israelites had to do in the tabernacle and the temple that were a shadow of Christ. No, that was all make-believe. None of that existed. That those were bad people that were being cruel to animals or whatever, and they were making up this sacrificial system. And now I'm like, okay, I get it. There is a danger. I'm not saying that everybody that's a vegan or a vegetarian, right, but if you're doing it for religious reasons, if somebody's coming to you and they're saying for religious reasons, I'm a vegetarian or a vegan, beware of that person, because there's something demonic going on, not necessarily in that person, but in this movement that claims to be religious and compassionate. Because this is what they say. I don't want to kill, you know, you killing an animal is cruel, and eating that animal. And so they play on people's sensibilities, you know,
Well, it's pretty clear that many times the Bible, or even in the New Testament, says all food is good, you know, basically, as long as, you know, you're whatever, not eating, drinking the blood or whatever it says. But
yeah,
and it also ties in a little bit probably to Bill Gates and his big movement and trying to make meat, nobody can eat meat, and making fake meat and all that.
Well, after investigating it further, it does say, I guess you can hunt and whatever, just as you can't eat it while it's live. But
oh, the Noahide laws? Okay, so Noahide laws might, okay, but there are other, regardless, the truth still stands that there are people that are forsaking the gospel for religious vegetarianism. That's what I'm going to call it. Their religion is not eating meat. It's
well, it's all crazy. Part of the religion of the left.
Yeah.
And isn't that the part where, to me, what I see out of it is even the elect.
Didn't quail come down from heaven?
Yes.
No, that was added. Huh? That's not really there either. Oh, your eyes are deceiving you.
But it's all part of the even the elect can be deceived. I mean, people are falling away that were true Christians, and they're being pulled away.
Yeah.
And that's what he says is going to happen.
Right.
You know, yeah,
there is a great apostasy in the end.
If the elect
can
be deceived, he shortened the time.
I'm going to eat myself.
You know?
Yeah. The deception would, you're right, the deception would be so great that even the elect would be deceived if it were possible, if that time was.
Who would have ever thought of that in our day and age?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just happening, just like this now. And the sad thing I say is that most good Christian people don't have an idea about this. They go to church every day. They believe in Jesus Christ. But they're not. It's a spiritual warfare that's happening that they have no idea about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was raised from the time I was little. You know, Billy Graham and I mean, I believed in Jesus. We all this kind of stuff. But who? I feel sad for the people that are not getting this story. Are they the blinded?
Yes, Nicodemus. He snuck to see Jesus in the dark.
Yeah.
He still went away confused.
For fear of the Zionists.
Yep. So it's just, it's really, people have to start, I don't know where you can get people to change over, I mean, other than prayer and talking, because they think we're nuts.
I don't think we can, other than our wit, like, I mean, this blind guy, he was born for that purpose, but the Pharisee, he couldn't convince the Pharisees, but other people saw that were not mentioned, and I'm sure there are many people believed by seeing him. And Zindra, I didn't mention it, but when he had to walk to the pool, Damien was absolutely right. He didn't get his sight till he washed himself, which is definitely a deep meaning with the baptism and all that. But the process of him walking to the pool, I think, was a certain distance. And so that would get the attention of a lot of people. Like, why is this blind guy walking around with mud on his eyes all the way to this pool? And so it was part of the testimony. I guess I was tying into it. Some people will see based off of your testimony, your example and all that, but a lot of people won't. And we there's nothing we really can do to change that. That's up to God.
Yeah. Wasn't it the first one that got in the pool got blessed instead of, you know what I'm talking about? Or is there a different pool?
I'm trying to remember.
The guy who couldn't walk.
I think that was the same pool.
Okay.
Bethesda, I think, is one.
Oh, yeah.
But was it had to be first.
Maybe it was a different pool.
Bethesda was the one where he had to do it seven times or something. I don't know. I can't.
The guy that was crippled, was he wanted to get healed by the pool.
But he could never get there first.
But then Jesus just healed him without the pool in that case.
Yeah, the angel would touch the water. Is that the one you
talked Yeah. about? And that seemed to be more of like a people relying on that, because there are natural springs even in the world today, I guess, that have healing properties in the water. Which, nothing wrong with that, but Jesus bypassed that and healed that man.
I don't know. I just feel so blessed that I was given the opportunity to believe this.
I know.
And I feel so bad for other people that don't have a clue.
I feel bad for the Indians.
Right.
We never gave them a shot. Just slaughtered them.
Who's that?
The Indians, when we came here.
Oh. Yeah, that's a whole nother.
Yeah, well, we don't need to open that up.
I'm just saying. Not perfect.
Right. Oh, no. No. Christians are definitely not perfect. Nobody. I don't think anybody should have that assumption that even Christians, even doing missionary work, were perfect, because there was always imperfections.
And then they sent their kids to America to learn English.
To become Christians.
And then they gave them blankets that were
smallpox.
Completely smallpox. Yeah. It's still happening today, to this day, that the medical, whatever. I'm just, I know what I know, and I'm shutting up.
All right.
You bring up a good point, though. And
you should probably get the mic.
On what Cheryl said about the...
Closer. There you go. Sorry. it doesn't work
unless
you're close.
And people being blinded and taking into the whole medical thing, you know, some people are clueless to the spiritual warfare, because why? The medical people are saying, oh, it's mental health, it's an imbalance in your brain, and they're trying to, like, scientify or make it a medical thing, when we all know it's spiritual. And when you have been in contact with someone like that, you can feel it. And I'm sorry, all these pills and crap that they're pushing in people, it's not helping. It's making it worse. It's making them weaker, so that spiritual thing can just take over them more and more and more. And so that people don't believe that there's a spiritual warfare, because that's weird to say that.
What did you read earlier about the tests that women take that give them cancer?
Yeah, I'm
going to
bring it up now.
Okay, never mind.
So just anybody in here, just so you don't get offended if I tell you to put the microphone closer to your mouth or anything like that. I get emails almost every week by somebody that says, hey, you need to fix that microphone of those people. And I'm like, I try to tell them, take the microphone, talk into it. I'm like,
I try to hand it to people
microphone
and then they refuse it.
I'm so loud, I don't need a microphone. We all know
But we do have some more elderly people that are in their 70s that do, yeah, there you go, that watch. And I can, when I hear them say, I can't hear them. And I'm like, I rewatch the video and I'm like, oh, I can hear it. But I got to realize that some people can't hear as good as others. And we want to make sure they can hear.
I think that's probably good.
Yeah,
all right.
I do too.
All right. Now we're rambling now, huh? I suppose we can shut off the camera and ramble, huh? All right. Well, we hope everybody enjoyed this study. The Book of John, an amazing, powerful, spiritual book. I hope everybody's enjoying it. Stay in his word. We'll see every day so you can be a Christian overcomer. But we'll see you next week, next Sunday in John chapter 10. God bless. Great sign burning in the sky, woman crying, crowned with light. Dragon waiting at her feet, teeth like night, heart full of spite. Child is carried to a throne, war breaks out above this world, earth opens like a shield.